welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Voodoo Rework Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt of PapaNewt.com in Columbus, Nebraska, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Conjurman Ali of ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California, and special co-host, Deacon Millett of FourAltars.org in Joshua Tree, California. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, Miss Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, bringing us today's topic on Miss Cat's new edition of Louis D. Claremont's Legend of Incense, Herb, and Oil Magic. Afterwards, they will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooists of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Conjurman Ali and Deacon Millett. Conjurman Ali?
Thanks for that lovely introduction, Papa Newt. So, as you can all tell, by that I am not Cat. And she is not starting the show. This is a special broadcast of the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, in which I have replaced the lovely Cat Ironwood, Deacon Millett has replaced me, and for our guest, we have a special treat, Cat herself. And we'll talk a little bit about some exciting projects that she is working on she's been working quite diligently on. And that is her book. So I'm very excited about this show. It isn't often that we get to interview the host themselves. So this is going to be quite a treat, and it's going to be all sorts of lovely fun. Because this is an interesting broadcast, I want to start as soon as possible. So let's check in with Deacon Millett first, and then we will go directly to start asking some questions. Cat. So Deacon Miller, are you there?
I am here and happy to be playing musical chairs with you guys today.
It is kind of like musical chairs. Well, thank you for joining us and thank you for co-hosting. How are you doing and what's going on in your corner of the world?
Oh, I'm just trying to get on top of everything so that I can leave. The biggest trick to traveling with the Grand Earth Trine is dislodging yourself from your reality. So I've got a lot of caretaking and making sure that all my clients are covered so that I can hop on the plane at the end of the week and be up in Forestville for the weekend.
Yeah, that definitely is the trick. Try to empty the queue as soon as possible so that when you come back, you don't have too much work to do. But for whatever reason, the reality is that no matter how hard you work to kind of empty the queue, by the time you return from a trip, it's already backed up. It's already backed up.
Absolutely.
When you're at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, are you away from work and business, or are you still checking in your emails and doing readings, like at the hotel or whatnot?
I'm checking in daily. There's no way to not. But I do have an assistant who covers the mail, and that helps a lot. So I just take on the crises, and she takes care of the rest.
Oh, that's wonderful. But it's true. There's no real way of kind of disconnecting. But I do like the at least you have some level. Like, okay, I can handle the urgent stuff. But we'll have the assistant deal with everything else. That's fantastic. It's something I really need to consider. I do look forward to hearing news from the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. So I will live vicariously through all of you. But let's actually start. Let's bring in Kat. This is strange, bringing her on to her own show. but I'm actually enjoying this. So Kat, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, and thank you for having me as a guest.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you as a guest, and actually quite interesting and exciting. I think this is going to be a great show. I, Penelope, I'm very interested in our topic, which is your new edition of Louis de Clermont's Legends of Incense, Herb, and Oil Magic. So I'm going to ask you, to kind of start us off, can you tell us a little bit about the book and what inspired you to put out this new edition?
Okay, well, I'm old enough to remember when you didn't walk into a candle shop without this book being for sale. And it was just every store had it, along with the Master Book of Candle Burning by Henri Gamache and a few others, Protection Against Evil, a.k.a. Terrors of the Evil Eye Exposed. There were several of these books that every store had. Now, you could go in some places and find a few other books. And by the time of the 80s, there was a kind of a new wave of what we called candle shop occultist books. But this book, Legends of Incense, Herb, and Oil Magic, was in print. It went through many editions. And it was in print all my life, and it came out first in 1936. By the time that I caught up with it, around 1962, 1964, owned my own copy, it was the book that everyone went to. And it's been very funny to me over the years. I put out a book called Hoodoo Urban Root Magic, which is has a list of herbs. I was inspired in doing that by this book. This book was my Bible, my generation's Bible of hoodoo. Now, over the years, different editions came out, and they just got worse and worse and worse. The original typesetting was long lost, and people would just reprint it. It was being reprinted continually by a company called Doreen Publishing, and they would pick it up, make a photo of the book, and then make new plates, and it would be lighter and lighter and lighter. So all of the details and the art began to disappear, except for the cover. And for some reason, the cover got darker and darker and darker. And that's the way it is in printing. Either you're going to get darker or you're going to get lighter. But by on the fifth or sixth generation of copying that cover, you could no longer see what was on the cover. It just was this big black blur. And they didn't make it any better by printing it on pink paper, because pink is almost impossible to photograph black against pink using the old-fashioned film process for making copies. And I think, in fact, it was printed on pink paper so that it wouldn't be copied. But then, of course, they had to make their own copies, and they failed terribly. Not only that, the first edition was actually not typeset. It was actually typewriter type, which had been shrunk down in a camera to make it small. And it was 10 chapters long, and it was quite a long book. And it had a beautiful art, beautiful ads, really a lovely book. Apparently, and as I understand it from Ed Kay, who was the son of the man who ended up printing and owning the rights to the book, his father, Joseph Spitalnik, was a printer, and his father and his uncle, Max Spitalnik, were not only printers, they were Jewish immigrants and probably of Polish-Jewish background, and they were printers in New York, and they also, I think they might have been in Pennsylvania. Anyway, they played in a jazz band, and they played in an interracial jazz band, which was not unique in those days, but it was uncommon. And they basically hung out in black society. They also knew a man who was also a jazz musician whose name is only known as Mr. Young. And Mr. Young was also Jewish. And it appears that Mr. Young came from a family that had been pharmacists and perfumers. And I can explain why I say that, but just bear with me a moment. Mr. Young was also in this jazz band, and he was also the manager of a black stage magician named Black Herman, whose real legal name was Benjamin Rucker. And Benjamin Rucker toured the South. He lived in New York. They all had by this time moved to New York. And this guy, Mr. Young, started a perfume company and then a hoodoo supply company. And it was one of the first that was organized on a nationwide basis, and he put advertisements in all of the black-owned papers. He was obviously very familiar with black culture, although he probably was Jewish. He also was familiar with Chinese culture, and he advertised and sold things that he would have only been able to find from Cantonese Chinese suppliers in New York's Chinatown. So this is a very weird thing. Anyway, Benjamin Rucker died. This guy kept on printing his book with Mr. Spitalnik, and then he wrote his own book, Legends of Incense, Urban Oil Magic. And he, according to Ed Kay, who was Joseph Spitalnik's son, he was an inveterate gambler, and he lost a lot of money, and he couldn't pay his printing bill. And he said to Joseph Spitalnik, "I can't pay for the books. You keep them. You distribute them." And at that point, Joseph Spitalnik saw a new reality there, and he began to distribute the books. But when he went to reprint it, he thought, "I could make this book shorter and save a lot of paper and a lot of work printing." So he typeset it, and it still was a little long, so he just chopped a chapter off of it. And, you know, why not? We just don't need that chapter. We're just going to take it away. So when I was young, the book had 9 chapters, and I was mightily surprised when I found a first edition. It was 10 chapters long.
Interesting.
And also, the material in it, what was cut out, was fascinating material. So that's the story of this book. Now, it stayed in print. It went through many editions. There's the pink cover. Mm-hmm. There's the red cover. There's the white cover with red printing and so forth. But the first edition was green, and that's why I'm reprinting it with a green cover. And
nice. I wanted to ask you, because this is, I really appreciate what the story you've come through here, because a lot of people don't know when someone says that it's a new edition, reprinted or revised, they often don't know what's really going on here. What you're talking about is actually restoring a book. Right. This is a historical thing that you've done, right? It's really fantastic. You've gone back and kind of peeled back the layers. What happened, especially with these kind of older books, is this what we call modular archiving, right? In which you take a model and then you replicate it and you replicate it and you replicate it, but as you keep doing it, it becomes less and less like the original, or the quality decreases over the years. And this is also quite particularly common with like the old Xerox machines, right? When you tried to make a copy of a copy, it ended up being a little blurry, and you kept doing it. And what happens is you end up barely being able to read what it was that you copied. So what you're doing is actually peeling back the layers, digging back down, excavating kind of the original and bringing it back to life. So it's a very big service that you're kind of providing here. You're offering an opportunity for people to see the book as it was kind of meant to be.
Well, there's more to it than this, because at one point in 1966, whoever put it together to make the 1966 reprint turned one of the pages upside down. And it's an art page. It's just a page of art. The caption was taken off. About 1938 and 42, all the captions were taken off the pictures. I mean, it's insane, right? So then you turn that picture upside down and nobody knows what it is. And I remember looking at this picture in the 60s and going, "What the heck is that?" And then I found an older copy and I went, "Wait a minute, this is that picture upside down. But what is this picture?" And I still couldn't tell because the caption was missing. So there's more to it than that even. And many of the pictures were simply taken out in order to shorten the book. Not only was a chapter removed, but entire pictures were just deleted. Whoop, whoop, all gone. And these are pictures of herbs and roots. And this led to scholars of hoodoo later saying things like, how do we know that Jalapa root, Jalap root, is John the Conqueror? We don't know that. We have no proof. But there it is in the book, right?
Right.
There's a drawing of it, right? So this book is seminal to understanding hoodoo. Also, there's a lot in this book, and I have to kind of like tip my hand a little bit and explain. There's a lot in this book that is the first instance of certain terminology being used outside of an academic setting. In other words, we have someone like Nobel Niles Puckett, and he goes and he interviews people, 400 and some people in the South, about hoodoo. Or we have Hyatt. Now remember, Hyatt's books didn't come out until the 70s, so we can kind of put him onto one side. But this book in 1936, this guy was using terms in a non-academic setting, not like Zora Neale Hurston, who published in the Journal of American Folklore, but he was using terms like cross conditions. He was talking about how to anoint, how to dress a person, how to dress a candle, and he was absolutely spot on. He knew what he was talking about. So all we can assume is that he was supplying root doctors with the oils, the sachet powders, and the other things, which we have his old catalogs too. And the name of his company was Oracle Products Company. And he sold these products as well as this book through nationwide distributed black-owned newspapers like the Afro-American, the Courier, Chicago Defender, so that black root workers all around the country, just not in the South, had access to this book and also to the oils and things that he made, as well as those that were locally made.
This is really interesting, right? Because one of the things that I think has been overemphasized in many ways is the kind of rural and oral tradition of hoodoo. And that's a good thing.
Right.
That's fantastic. But there's a certain fetishization that happens there, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, oh, if it wasn't oral, then it wasn't real hoodoo. And we hear this idea quite often that the spiritual supply shops couldn't really be hoodoo, right? It was just exploitation. Or we also see it as a way of dismissing, right? So that European or Western practitioners of magic often go, oh, well, hoodoo doesn't really have a magical tradition. They don't have books. It's kind of an illiterate tradition. But here what you're doing is uncovering that, no, there is a tradition of books in hoodoo, that black spiritual practitioners were buying these books, were engaging with these spiritual supply shops, were even aware of terms being used and contributing to the culture in what would be seen as a so-called literary tradition, almost, right? As a tradition of writing. And I think that's very interesting because the history of books in hoodoo is kind of an unspoken topic. It's this, oh yeah, books kind of existed, but that's not really hoodoo. That's not really what black people practice, but it is. Here you're showing
it is.
No, not only is it, but people were buying the book. It was a popular book. It was in everyone's possession at one point. But the book itself also demonstrates that there was a culture of buying supplies, engaging with these shops, and purchasing books and written material to be included in their work or to learn from. Would you say that that's
right.
accurate?
Yeah, I can even go farther than that. This book, and I say this with reference to worldwide folk magic, represents in 1936 the first hoodoo grimoire, to use that term. What I mean? It's a book of spells, a book of uses, a book of principles of magic, and it is like the Svartkunst books of trolldom that. Originally, yes, it was all an oral tradition in Sweden and Denmark and Norway. But in the 19th century, these began to be written down. Even earlier, there are even books from the 16 and 1700s in Sweden that give magical spells. This book, 1936, it's a very interesting time period because this is the year that Harry Hyatt had just published Folklore from Adams County, Illinois in 1935, and he took off to tour the South. And he is noticing this cutting edge on the beginning of the use of candles in hoodoo. And he even talks with a man named Reverend Young, who was a black minister, who says, yes, these candles are becoming popular. This book, 1936, is exactly contemporaneous. And this is where the use of candles is first introduced, long before the Master Book of Candle Burning. And so this book kind of just catches that wave, and I don't think he originated it. He's like seeing it, too, at the same time, 1936, this fad, this interest, this rise of candle magic as part of hoodoo, and it's been with us ever since.
He's bearing witness to that, and I think that's fantastic, right? Because he then becomes a historical source or primary source saying, look, this stuff was going on, right?
Right.
So that's how you would read that. The fact that he's bearing witness is a testimony that this was going on as a practice. Deacon Miller, this is really fascinating stuff, but you're also a person who has written books, who has, and also who's quite familiar with the editing process. So I think you can appreciate what Kat is doing here. I wanted to ask you about you know, what questions you may have regarding this particular book or Kat's engagement text.
I immediately want to get very detail-oriented. I want to know which picture was upside down. I want to know which chapter was left out. I mean, these are facts.
Well, I can certainly tell you chapter 10 was left out, and the picture that was upside down was the one that was called Man as Star. If you have an old copy, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's this strange picture of a five-pointed star with a man as a star, and it was the one. And it's really strange. The book contains a lot of spell work, and there's a lot of old European material in it. And I remember reading this when I was young and going, you could kind of tell what stuff was European and what stuff was hoodoo. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about it. And now, strangely enough, and I have to explain, there was also a lot of Jewish stuff in it and a lot of Chinese stuff. And then the Chinese stuff was what really kind of flipped my switch. I'm like, why is this book filled with Chinese stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But I figured it out because he had been buying supplies. Mr. Young was the man who introduced Young's Chinese wash, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really, again, this was something that now is so commonplace in hoodoo, but he was the guy who brought it in, and he got it obviously from Chinese people. He also was the one who introduced the use of the devil pod and other things that are Chinese, things you could find in a Chinese market. And that's kind of weird, too. But when I was looking for something, there was a thing that I thought was a typo. I just thought the book is filled with typos, and the typos arise because the typed manuscript was typeset by Mr. Spitalnik, who didn't really check against the original publication when they introduced the typos. And so I had a copy, which we had OCR'd, you know, we used a character recognition software, and those always have typos. So I was, you know, comparing it against the original and against what I was seeing with my eyes. And there was a word that I thought was a typo, and I thought, you know, I don't understand this word and never have. And I went into Google to use a string of words, just a partial sentence, and see what is this? What am I reading here? And it was about the Hindu goddess Kri, C-R-I. And I found out that part of this book, and I say this with all due respect for the man who did write most of the book, but part of the book was plagiarized from another book. And the book he had plagiarized was a book by a guy named Skinner, and it was written in 1915. And it's a book about English folklore. And so he padded his book out with that. So once I found a little bit of plagiarism, I thought, well, my gosh, there must be more. And I began to just grab random strings. And I found out another little bit plagiarized. But the weirdest thing, and actually the best thing I found out, was another string of text. And it came from and was plagiarized from a magazine that is sold only to druggists. In other words, it was a pharmaceutical review. Now,
So
where would he have gotten that? I had this sort of vision of him, hanging out at the New York Public Library and just ripping off books. But no, he had access to something that only druggists would have had access to. And there he was, making these formulas and these recipes and these perfumes. And I realized that for all he was the manager of Benjamin Rucker and for all he played in a black and white integrated jazz band, he also was the son of a druggist. He was the son of a Jewish pharmacist.
and that again brings up the connection to the Jewish pharmacies, right? The supply shop. People are going to think of supply shops now as purely a place where you buy magical supplies, but places, drugstores, pharmacies, places that sold beauty products, hair products, etc., often were deeply, especially in black neighborhoods or areas with a large black population, often were the hoodoo shops, right? The
That's
place
right.
that you bought your hair pomade was also the place that you would go to fix, you know, your bag, your mojo bag. So this is that's a fantastic historical connection, and quite surprising.
It was completely surprising to me, mm-hmm. and yet not. The minute I figured it out, I realized mm-hmm. what was going on with this book, and
mm-hmm.
I understood a lot more about this man and who he was. He wrote a bunch of books, and he wrote another book called The Ancients' Book of Formulas, in which he doesn't reveal any formulas. In fact, he goes out of his way to not reveal the formulas. And he was basically a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
He was not the most original man. I cannot, his idea of plagiarizing from books from 1915 doesn't really thrill me. As you all know, I'm mm-hmm. highly anti-plagiarism, and I really despise that. And yet, finding that out did not make the book something less historically valuable. But the things that he was working from was this magazine called The Practical Druggist and Pharmaceutical Review of Reviews of 1928. Like, I mean, where, you know what I'm saying? That's like
crazy.
Obscure to the max. If you're going to plagiarize from something really obscure. Yeah.
I love that. But speaking of surprising, I wanted to ask you, this is kind of a perfect lead up to this, is in addition to what you found, what was the most surprising or interesting thing that you found while editing this book, while doing the research, doing all this kind of fantastic historical work and work of really bringing this thing to life? What was the most surprising or interesting thing that you found, the thing that really stuck out? We heard a little bit about it, for example, the Chinese connection, the connection to the pharmacy and the druggist, but what really stood out for you?
You know, I found, I know this may sound very obscure, but at the time when he wrote, words like root worker were not used. Remember there were these laws against practicing medicine without a license.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The idea that root work was spiritual was sort of on the edge between, is it spiritual, is it medical? And
mm-hmm.
the thing I found most interesting was that he settled on a word to describe root workers that was not root workers. He called them mediums, as in spiritualist mediums.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to read you one thing here, because you can see he's crossing lines, trying to protect himself legally, and yet trying to present a true picture of African-American conjure practice. So this is his entry in his book for John the Conqueror, Low or Chewing. Now, this is, for those people who follow this show would know, Low John or Chewing John is Galangal, or otherwise known as court case root.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So here's what he wrote, very short entry. Sometimes called Chewing John the Conqueror. Many people like to use it by biting off a piece, chewing on it, spitting out the root, and swallowing the juice. It is really considered an excellent aid in certain stomach conditions. I know of many mediums who claim that the root part that has been expectorated takes away a crossed condition and sends it back. Do you see how many worlds he's walking through in that?
Yes.
I mean,
and that's
he's,
so fascinating.
He's in, he's out, he's in, he's out. He even uses the word expectorated. I mean, you know,
yes.
He's like, I'm the Jewish son of a druggist, and it really is an excellent aid in certain stomach conditions. Oh, and by the way, mediums spit it out, and it sends away cross conditions? I mean, well, this guy was like all over, and yet he kind of hides behind his neutral mask. He's a fascinating character to me. Fascinating.
You know what's fascinating, too, about that is it really highlights the kind of unique, diverse roots, if you'll pardon the pun, of hoodoo itself. Right. We really look at kind of we kind of forget that hoodoo is this amalgamation of cultures interacting with one another. And this is a perfect example of it. The use of the word medium there is deliberate. It's fascinating. It tells us about the person's knowledge of religions or spiritual practices that are going on around him, about the fad or the trends that might be going on, the rise of the spiritualist churches, the involvement of Black people in those churches. It's a really, really fantastic statement, and I think you can take a lot away from it.
It's understanding the history. Right. There's a lot embedded in that. I'm going to read you another one of his. And this is Wahoo Bark. Now, he spells Wahoo with two A's, which is the correct way to spell it. Mm-hmm. It's Wahoo Bark, but most people spell it with one A. So, again, he was familiar with this, presumably as a pharmacist through Native American use. And he says, Wahoo Bark has been used to uncross a person. By the way, he never defines uncrossed in the book because he knows that his audience will know what it is, and if he says it, he will be arrested, right? Been used to uncross a person, tea of it, and while rubbing on the head of the person, call aloud Wahoo 7 times. So here we know he's embedded in the community of Native American / African American work, right? And he's using very special terminology, but he doesn't reveal what it is to uncross a person. It's interesting. It's very, very interesting.
It's also fascinating to hear the term uncross. Right.
Yeah, that early, exactly.
That is fantastic. I mean, Deacon Millett, all three of us have had this kind of conversation, right, about the role of the kind of urban and the mixing of cultures that really produces what we today call hoodoo and the practices that we do, and the kind of forgetting of that. Right. There's this bizarre, like, if it isn't from the South, it wasn't hoodoo, right? But people forget that these things happened in the cities, that people migrated, that they had Chinese connections, right? And that was just as much hoodoo as what your grandma was doing down in the town, right? I mean, all three of us, we've gone on hours and hours about that. Wouldn't you agree, Deacon Millett?
Oh, absolutely. The fact that it's a living tradition is so key. It isn't something that has been stabilized and killed, and I think it gains part of its power from the fact that it's in constant mutation. It's one of the things that's fun about the forum is to watch things migrate over time new ideas being introduced that are the inferences from previous ideas and new implications being added to things. And that's what keeps it not just folklore for study, but something to practice.
Right.
And you see it. You see it. The pieces that you've read there, Kat, right? You see movement. You see evolving. You see an active and engagement with cultures and people and ideas, and then adopting them and making their own. So it's something quite beautiful there. You are also, if I can just kind of tie these two together, you're going to be presenting this book at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. Am I correct in understanding this?
That's right. Everybody who attends the festival on the day that I do this lecture will get a copy of this book as part of the inclusion of their ticket price.
And the lecture that you're going to be giving is going to be based off of this book, as well as the kind of history of books in general in hoodoo. Is that correct?
That's right. And there's going to be a little bombshell dropped. I'm going to be dropping a little bombshell, which I don't want to really get into right now. But many of these older authors are anonymous, and we know them as hoodoo authors, but we don't know who they are. Well, I have found out who one of them is, And I'm not going to go any further.
Is this the No. I want to ask.
Don't even ask.
Okay. Well,
don't ask. Don't tell.
But this made me very excited. This made me very excited because I think
yes,
we've had a similar conversation recently. Okay, great. I'm going to leave it at that. That's it.
I have, but it's not Louis de Clermont, I'll tell you that. It's somebody else.
Right.
It's somebody
exciting,
actually.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm about, you know, very, very excited that I found this out. And I'm not going to tell until we get you come to the Voodoo Heritage Festival if you want to know the secret. Now, another thing in this book, The Legends of Incense Urban Oil Magic, it's the first book that shows how to anoint a person with oils. It tells how to dress a candle. And it also is the originating point for the idea of burning candles in triangles of candles or burning them on a triangular piece of paper called a trinity. And these are things that are very common in hoodoo now. We don't know whether Mr. de Clermont originated these, whether he learned them from other practitioners. I believe he did learn them from other practitioners because he himself was presumably a pharmacist and not an actual, what he referred to as a medium. So he talks about the idea of how to magnetize a candle, how to dress it. And really, these are things that were, in my youth and in my adulthood, the most common forms of working with candles during the days before glass candles came on the market. These were the free-standing 4-inch, 6-inch, and jumbo candles. And to this day, in the Lucky Mojo Forum, people ask, what does this mean? What does this mean? And I used to say, well, just buy this book. But the book went out of print around 2006. It's been out of print for almost 10 years. And I bought what I believe to have been the last case of the really butchered up copies, and I sold them. And when they were gone, they were gone. So we're raising a new generation who don't really know how to anoint a person with oil.
Exactly.
Who don't know how to magnetize a candle.
Because we're about to run out of time, and I want to ask this final question. For people who are interested in this book, how can they get a hold of it?
Well, you can go to the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, and we will give you a copy. After the festival, it will be on sale at the Lucky Mojo Curio Company and other places. Papa Newt will carry it. Amazon will carry it. You can go to the Lucky Mojo Forum. It has its own thread, and you can pre-order right there.
Thank you very much, Kat, for being our guest and having such a wonderful conversation with us. This was interesting. I am so, so excited about this book as a fellow historian. So people, please keep an eye out for it. And we're going to now move on to our readings and have Papa Newt lead us forward.
The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with your hosts, Conjure Man Ali and Deacon Millett. And this week's special guest, Miss Catherine Ironwood, will be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners, answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our calling clients are selected from among those who have filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or via telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. If you filled out a client questionnaire at the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. We'll be selecting callers by their area code, and if your area code is announced, we'd like you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Papa Newt, to read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our host. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our first caller. Our first caller is a new listener calling from area code 646 in upstate New York. This is Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. Oh, welcome to the show. And I see that you haven't gone to Contraband Ali, Miss Cat, or Deacon Millett for any readings, but you do get readings every few months. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And Michelle writes, I feel very stuck and unsure professionally, I'm a writer, and intellectually, and often feel like I'm getting dumber. I've been trying to meditate and keep a clean house/life, but I find myself distracted almost every time. I just know that once I focus and commit, I could be unstoppable, but I often feel like I'm moving underwater and that my life is a mess. Is there something I can do spiritually to stop getting in my own way or something bigger blocking me? Turning back to you, Congressman Ali.
Thanks, Papa Newt. This is going to be, I'm going to do the first reading for you, but before I do that, I'm going to ask a few clarifying questions. First and foremost, you couldn't have called at a better time. All three of the people that are on the that'll be speaking to you, myself, Kat, and Deacon Miller, are all writers, and we've all made a living off of our writing. And we write in very different fields. As you just heard from the interview, Miss Kat is just putting out a new book, and so Deacon Miller. This is a great time for you to call in. So a few clarifying questions. You say that you are a writer. So what genre of writing are you in? Are you a blogger? Are you looking to write the next great American novel? Do you write nonfiction? What is it that, you're doing?
I'm an aspiring novelist, so fiction.
You're an aspiring novelist. Okay. Have you had any publications in the past, or is this still an ongoing process for you?
I've had some short stories published
in
anthologies, and I have an agent, and I got close to publishing a novel, but it didn't work out for reasons I won't go into. But none of the major houses bought the book.
Okay, all right. So you do have a completed manuscript already, and it's just you're looking to get it published. Is that correct?
No, one that I completed didn't sell, so I just moved on and tried to keep writing something else. And that is in the middle. I'm in the middle of that.
Okay, and what is your sign of the zodiac?
Aquarius.
Aquarius, okay. All right. Now, I've pulled the cards, but before I dive into that, just a quick reminder for people. Ooh, I say this every single time. The sign of Aquarius is one of the signs that tends to do things a little bit later in life. So they find, for example, a lot of Aquarius find success a little bit later. And that's not to say that they're doomed or anything like that. It's just they're ruled by Saturn. It takes a little bit longer. The same thing we find with Capricorns, for example. Capricorns tend to fall in love later in life or marry later in life or have, for example, age differences in relationships. We find with Aquarius, it comes down to work, right? The work that Aquarius do, they tend to find their niche and success a little bit later in life. So something to remember that. So I have three cards here. The first card that I have is the Chariot. The Chariot shows us a conqueror, a victor, someone with great power, and they are riding in a chariot. Above him is a canopy of stars. He's just leaving a castle on his way to do battle. And there are two sphinxes before him that draw the chariot, but there is no rein between the sphinxes and the chariot. The potential for success is there. The potential for power and victory is there. But what's going on here is not an issue of cross conditions or someone has actively blocked you, but rather you needing to do two things. One, find the right timing, and that is the stars above in the canopy. And two, find the right help, something that pulls you along. So you want to, I would highly recommend getting yourself some form of astrological reading. Deacon Miller is a fantastic astrologer. He can help you with that. But astrological readings can often also tell you this time period is really good for you, or this time in your life is going to be ideal for you. So knowing the right time is going to be very, very important. Second, finding the right connection, the people that will help you. We have a black sphinx and a white sphinx. You want to do work that magically supports you, but you also want work in the material to help you along. So you're feeling a bit stuck, intellectually stagnating. Make sure that, for example, you're part of a writer's group where they, you know, you have a commitment, writing Monday. Every Monday you'll write a chapter. Every Monday you'll write 500 words or 1,000 words or whatever words. But these type of writing groups or support systems are very, very important because they add an element of oversight for you and also help to deal with kind of the confusion and to pull you along. While you're doing that, make sure that you've got magical work going, spiritual work to support you, candles, prayers, etc., and so forth. We will have a root work consultation after the reading. The next card that I have is the Seven of Cups. The Seven of Cups really speaks to the situation that you are in right now. It shows us a man looking up at a mirage, and that mirage has all sorts of goblets. These are beautiful goblets with reeds and jewels and castles. But if you look closely, they're also filled with images of poisons and monsters and serpents. And in the center, there is an angelic figure that is close. This means that you really need to find your niche. You need to find where it is that you're going to be successful in and not allow the distractions to draw you away. That's why you're doing that type of both-handed work or working at different angles that we saw in the Chariot card is going to be so important. Because where you're at, you're in a state of being clouded, you're fogged, and we need to move beyond that. So the way forward is going to be using the spiritual insight of the Chariot to break through that and really finding your niche, finding the path that is meant to be specific with you. If you're writing the great American novel, make sure that you know exactly what genre of novel you're writing, who your audience is, and so on and so forth. And how do you do that? The final card that we have is the Six of Wands. The good news is you will be successful because here we see the triumphant person finally walking forward. In the Chariot, the triumphant victor is not moving. In the Six of Wands, we have motion. He's quite literally riding in triumph. Triumph was a Roman practice in which the victor of a battle would walk through in parade along with the spoils of war and were celebrated. This person is riding on their horse. He has a staff in his hand, a wreath of victory on top of that staff. All around him are his supporters, allies and friends that have helped this person succeed. So the answer first is that, yes, you will eventually be successful. You will eventually get published. But the key is to find the right people in your life that will support you. You've got an agent. Great. You need a little bit more than that. You need people that will keep tabs on you, that will motivate you, and that you, in turn, will support them. You need a reciprocal relationship because your victory is their victory and their victory is your victory. You need to do some magical work to kind of push things spiritually and build momentum. You do these things, find the right people, do the right magical work, and you will be successful. So that's what I see here in my readings. We're going to turn to Kat, who is going to do our next reading, and then Deacon Miller is going to give you some root work advice. So, Kat, please take it away.
Okay. Well, I got a slightly different beginning, but my closing is similar to what Ali saw. The first card I see is the Page of Wands. Now, this is an adventurous young person who is sitting out on a journey of life, and they aim very high, and they are able to go where they want to, do what they want to, because they actually have an understanding of the basis of, in this case it's called geometry, but really it means the natural basis of life. And I think that this card shows that you have every right to aim high. You know, we get calls on this show all the time, and people are often have unrealistic expectations, but this card does say that your expectations are not unrealistic. One of the things it does point to is the possibility of travel, and I don't know whether where you're living right now is the best place for you. It may be that something as simple as moving to a different place in the same city or to a different town altogether might be of help to you in your career, because this card does indicate a journey. It may mean just taking a break and taking a small journey while working. I would just keep that in mind. The card shows the ancient pyramids of Egypt, and it has a relationship to the idea of, again, of astrology and the stars, because this young geometer is looking at the sky and sighting a distant star over the peak of a staff. And again, that would say to me, you might want to get an astrological reading on this. As a writer, I'll tell you, don't throw away any novel. Don't be one of those fools who burns their first novel in the fireplace. It will be something you take with you, and it may come to pass at a later time. The second card I have is the Three of Cups, and this shows three women. It's like the three graces, and they are saluting one another with wine glasses, and they're dressed in sort of classical Roman garb, and they have flowers and fruit in their hair, and they're holding bunches of grapes. And also there are anomalously pumpkins on the ground. It's sort of like the New World meets the Old World here. And this is a card about having friends and companions of the way who share similar goals. It could be something as simple as a writing group or a program of that type, but it also can be having friends who are also in that field who will cheer you on, who will pass your name to others. It's a card of mutual aid and assistance. In other words, whatever your personality is, do not lock yourself alone in a room and write and be found dead like Emily Dickinson with a big pile of poetry. You need to be part of the social scene, the arts and literary scene. This is what this card is about, sharing and caring for others, helping them along their way, and they will help you. It is a card of artistic aspiration and a card of grace and skill, and it's a very nice card. Third card I have is a card called the Eight of Pentacles, and this is the card of steady work. Usually when it comes at the beginning of a reading, I tell the person, I kind of hammer into them that they need to work harder. Here it's at the end, and it says to me that you already know this, that you just need to put your nose back into the job. And this shows a workman making golden coins, and it can stand for the accumulation of wealth, but it's wealth through effort, and the coins are on display. So put everything you have on display. Major meaning for this card to me always is, do you have a website? Do you have business cards? Are people able to find your stuff? Give them some teasers for free. Don't just be a blogger. And anything that doesn't work out, there's one coin on the floor underneath his workbench. If it doesn't work out, cast it aside for now and start something new, which you've already said you're doing. So this card just reinforces you are on the right track. So that's my reading for this. And I just want to point out that in the chat room, someone here mentioned also Actors Guild type people so they can read and relate. It may be some stories become better movies than they do books, and that was a great piece of suggestion from, I believe the name is pronounced Gia. And that's a great piece of advice, because I have known people who did not get their first novel published until the novel was picked up for a movie, and then the publication as a book followed right before the movie was in production. So something to think about.
Thank you for that reading, Kat. That was fantastic. I think we really had a lot of similar points there. So pay attention. Mm-hmm. When readings kind of line up in that way, they're telling you something. Let's have Deacon Millett tell us, give us some root work advice. Deacon Millett, you're a writer, you've published, so you know some tricks, you know some strategies. Please share.
Well, I definitely do. I encourage you to use Blockbuster products and Road Opener products and Crown of Success. All of those are really incredibly useful for making breakthroughs. I'm a big fan of Clarity Oil when I'm feeling mentally blocked or challenged. And it does sound like a combination of Solomon Wisdom and Clarity will help clear your mind. When you say you feel like you're getting dumber, it's definitely something that resonates with me. So go for Clarity products, maybe some Van in there, and get yourself clear-headed. And I would like to see you with a mojo bag for writing. And the herbs that I would choose for this are Master Root, Solomon Seal Root, Deer's Tongue, Lemongrass, and Five Finger Grass. And then one thing that you can get, you can look in thrift stores or Etsy often, get a typewriter key. and put that into your mojo bag so that you carry that little typewriter key with you at all times. I really felt very much for the idea of mutual aid. And I think that if you get out there on Facebook and find your way to some writing coaches who have group classes, and these things can even be virtual, that you'll really strengthen things through that. And the last thing I wanted to mention was self-publishing. You've put a lot on the stamp of approval from a publishing house with tons of money, but digital publishing exists now, and it is a way to get stories directly into the hands of people. It is how we've seen things like Twilight and the Gray stories take off through self-publishing first, and then they were discovered and turned into blockbusters. So don't feel like that's the option of failure. Feel like instead it may be the option of success in the face of an ignorant publishing community that doesn't get you. That could also be one way of pushing forward without relying on other people's approval.
Those are great suggestions, Deacon Miller. Thank you. I think Deacon Miller's absolutely right. And again, the community is really important for also keeping you intellectually sharp. The only thing I would add to that is that Crown of Success is fantastic. You want eloquence, you want success with your five fingers, you want victory, because I saw you see that laurel leaves in the Six of Wands. So Crown of Success is really, really going to be a good addition to what was recommended here. Kat, do you have any suggestions that you'd like to make based on the reading that you did?
Yes, I love the mojo bag, and I like the idea of perhaps dressing it with Crown of Success as well, making a little blend. And something else, and bay leaf would be good to add to that because of the card that you pulled. I would also, because I saw these the idea of these pentacles, maybe put a coin in, because you do want money. It's not just about the fame. You're also looking for a way to make an income as a writer, and that's a good way to do it. A little talismanic coin would help. I love the idea of the typewriter key. Also, you might want to just write your petition on the back of a very small printout of the first page of the book, of the novel. In other words, print it very, very small, reduce it down, and then on the back of it, write a petition such as, you know, may my works be seen by one and all, and carry that with you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's great.
Beautiful.
There's a lot of different avenues for you available, and I think you've gotten some great strategies here. Please take them into consideration and implement them, and let us know how things go for you. This is a new world, right? It was not easy to connect with writers back in the day, but with the digital world, you are able to connect with people, you're able to self-publish, so there's a lot of different things available. Thank you for giving us your questions and trusting us with your situation. I wish you all the best, and we're going to have Papa Newt lead us on to our next client.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Reworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our next client. Our next client is calling from area code 940. This is Charles from Texas, returning. He's a returning client. Charles, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Great. Great for you. Thank you for calling in. And I see you are calling about, you have an upcoming public event that you will be emceeing at. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All
and I was
right.
just wanting to know, you know, how it's going to go.
All right. Turning it back to you, Congressman Ali.
Thanks for that, Papa Newt. Well, welcome, Charles. We're very happy to have you from the great state of Texas. We are going to have Deacon Millett do the first reading as our wonderful co-host today, and then we'll have Ms. Kat, and I will finish up with some root work. So, Deacon Millett, why don't you do the reading and find out a little bit about this upcoming public event?
Okay, well, I'm going to pull three cards from the Secret to King Oracle deck here. And the first card is Serpent Power. This card shows a cobra striking and a bolt of lightning striking. Looks like whatever it is coming up fast and furious, and it's going to happen suddenly and then be over. This card is often indicative of a sudden magic spell of some kind, so be prepared for that. The second card here is Horseplay, and it shows two horses nuzzling each other in the foreground with four other horses in the background representing the horsemen of the apocalypse. But it is a card of community. Horses are a herd animal, and this card tells me that you will be a part of your herd, your tribe, your group of folks. So that should provide a lot of support. The third card is one that my love clients love to get. This card is the Rose Garden. And I have a feeling that it's probably a little more literal in this case, but it tells me that there is new love to be found in this situation that you're going to be in.
Uh-oh.
Great. Thank you very much. There are many roses where I'm going to be going.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Perfect sense.
Thank you for that reading, Deacon Millett. Ms. Kat, what do you see? What insight can you give us?
Well, let me ask a few questions, Charles. First of all, what is your sign of the zodiac?
I am a Capricorn, ma'am.
A Capricorn. And so you're going to this event and you're traveling away from where you normally are, correct?
That is correct. I'm traveling many thousand plus miles.
Okay. All right. So let's look at what we see here as far as getting there and what it's going to be like, and then what the event itself will be like. So I'm going to do three cards. The first will be on your travel there. The second will be on the event, and the third will be on your travel home, if that's okay with you. That's the way I'd prefer to read this. Not a past, present, and future, but a future, future, and future, if you see what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first card I have is the Three of Pentacles. This shows three people building a cathedral or church, and they are all in alignment, a bit like that card that I had for the previous client, Michelle, which was about the Three of Cups, which was about community. This is also about community, but it's a little bit more formally hierarchical. There is a priest or monk who is the one who dictates this thing shall be. There is an architect who plans it and says it shall be according to this way of being. And then there is an artisan who freelance kind of carves these designs in this church. There isn't a lot of money in this thing, but it says to me that going there, you have a choice of three roles as far as the trip there goes. You can be the master, you can be the architect, or you can be the helper. And knowing what I know of this sort of an event, you're probably fluid and able to take any role. The interesting thing is, though, going there, you are not going in expectation of money. You are going in expectation of building community, because the arch of the church that's being built is called the Three of Coins, but there are no coins in the image. It's just three pentacles. And a lot of people see these pentacles and they go, oh, it's witchcraft, it's Wicca. So there is a little bit of an idea of the occult there, but really it's about community and sharing and not about money. So you may not be, the event may not be for you a way to earn a living, but so much as a way to participate in community building. The second card
I also want to say to you that that's fascinating because I'm going as one of three people. There are three of us going, and of those three people, there is, in fact, a master, an architect, and a helper.
Oh, okay then. There we go. That's very good. All right. And one of the people I might add is wearing the most incredible spotted garment. That it's just this fabulous Renaissance garment. So whenever I see that, I look, and one guy's got a leather apron, on another, they're assuming certain roles with respect to one another. Yeah, so I see this as a traveling and a threesome makes sense here. The next card is the card of what will happen while you're there. Okay, so this card is called The World, and it shows a beautiful lady dancing in the sky with four people watching. So this is a good card for paying attention to what is, you know, shown to you, what is presented. The beautiful lady is dressed in a fluttery scarf that sort of wraps around her body, and she's dancing. She has two wands, one in each hand, and she's in a wreath of laurel leaves, which stand for wisdom, insight, clarity of purpose. And there are four animals around the corner, four types of people, earth, air, fire, and water, representing Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. So this is a presentation in front of many types of people. And this says to me that you will learn a lot. You will also be able to show yourself off. People will look at you and look up to you. And they will be people of all types who will be viewing you. You will expose a certain amount of yourself. The young woman is half naked. She shows her bosom to the world, but she does not show her pudenda, her private parts. She's kind of like, ain't I slick, but you can't have it all, kind of, if you know what I'm saying. But there is an element of sexuality when you get there as well. And Deacon Millett said this too, and I find that there may be even something a bit sexually transgressive because of this lady being half naked. When we get this card, people often say, does this mean I have to become a pole dancer or a lap dancer? But no, it just simply says that there will be a little bit of letting it all hang out, as it were, at this event. Okay?
That's fascinating because I'll be talking about a topic at this event that sort of talks about sexual transgression, if you will.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going to be talking about sexual transgression. Well, that makes perfect sense with this card. And then the third card is the return back home. And this is a funny card. It's called the card of strength. And so you have two trumps here and one pip card. And the card of strength is a card that shows a woman controlling a lion. And she has the infinity symbol over her head. She has a little wreath of herbs and flowers. And she's basically shutting the lion's mouth. And the lion is this, you know, great beast. But he's actually very obedient to her, maybe even a little dominated by her. And she says, you know, that's enough. And she closes the lion's jaws. So on your way home, you will be kind of tamped down a little bit. But also the lion is licking the woman's hand and is very grateful to be in the presence of his better half, as it were. We sometimes say that this woman has some knowledge and interest in music, because they always say music calms the savage breast and or beast. And so this is a woman with some musical knowledge and talent. And it also says to me that you will return from this event with some strength renewed. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Kat. That was a fantastic, fantastic reading. That gives us plenty of time to kind of talk about root work for your situation. And I think you know, we can all pitch in on this, but I'll get it started. Obviously, you know quite a bit about root work yourself, and you know what to do. But based off of the readings, these are something that I would recommend. First and foremost, what I would do is some type of incense work. right, as a prayer for the travel and as well for the success of this event, because you are going to be speaking, because you are going to be presenting. You want to be successful. You want to be victorious. And while you're a very skilled presenter and you are quite a talented individual, a little bit of work can help. And in light of Ms. Kat's book, I think some incense work is exactly what is needed here. So I want you actually to make your own incense. You're going to grind up together some some Solomon seal root, some five-finger grass. This is for wisdom and for five-finger grass for success with all five of your fingers. Deer's tongue for eloquence. You want bay leaf for victory. And I recommend some frankincense as well, some resin. You are going to mix this all together and burn it on some charcoal as you recite prayers for success, for victory, praying from your heart. You are a skilled psalmist, so you can add whatever psalm you'd like to this as well. You know far more than I do when it comes to the psalm. So add what you feel is right for you. And you want to do this, I would say, 7 days before you actually leave for the event. You are going to offer up the incense every day at dawn as the sun rises, burning the incense, offering prayers, calling for success. On the last day, what you're going to do is you're going to take a pinch of the ashes that are left. You're going to put it in a little a container. You can put it wherever you'd like, a paper container, a plastic container with your toiletries or whatnot. And you're going to carry it with, you're going to take it with you on your travel. And then on the day of the event, you're going to take the ash and you're going to rub it on your hands. Okay? And you're going to rub it on your hands before you go up, before you give your presentation, before you go before the public. And you're going to wipe your hands in the ash. You can also rub a little bit on your feet as well. I included Solomon seal root very deliberately here. One, because of your connection with Solomon, and two, because of the wisdom. There are three roles that you may play here, as Ms. Kat pointed out. But the final card that she pulled out is strength. Strength is also about knowing how to be successful or how to have power without using dominating force. So you have a very big personality. You're a very interesting and charismatic person. And part of the reading that I saw with Kat is knowing when to put that on and when to shut that off. When to be the leader, when to be the monk, when to be the architect, and when to be the artisan, right? So that's why we want Solomon's seal here, so that you have the wisdom to know when to turn it on and when to turn it off, because that is part of the success. It's not always about being charismatic, charming, and a big personality 24/7. It's also about knowing when to step back and let the community kind of step forward. So that's very important there. The next thing that I want you to do is I want you to get some slippery elm, fern, and eucalyptus. And you are going to do this the day before you go. You're going to burn these to ash as well. You're going to burn these to ash, reciting Psalm 91. And you're going to make a cross on your feet the day of your travel before you leave. And this is to protect you on your travel, to make sure that you slip through any obstacles, any blockages, so that you avoid any type of thefts or misplacements. Or evil eye and jinxes. And you're going to do this as a form of protection. So that's what I would recommend. These two works, both of them involve burning something. Both of them involve ash. But I think that they are ideal for your situation. And I'm now going to ask, see if our guest, Kat, has anything to add, or Deacon Miller has anything to add to this.
Well, I do have one thing to add. And I know that travel can be upsetting and disturbing to people. And I would only add one thing, and there's always I always add one thing, and that would be comfrey root. And my reason for adding comfrey root is that it is a remarkable root. It comes from a plant, the comfrey plant, which has sort of soft, hairy, green leaves, kind of almost prickly to the hand. But the root is a dark black root, and it's very kind of wiry and twisty, thick. It could be as thick as a pencil or sort of just thin and twisty. And the funny thing about comfrey root is if you grab it out of the ground and throw it down on the ground, it will grow another comfrey plant. You don't need to add any kind of root hormones. You don't even need to really water it. It's just the root itself will grow anywhere. And so comfrey root has been used by travelers for a long time to mean that wherever you are set down, you will be planted. And you will find friends along the way. You will find people who will help you along the way. And so a comfrey root is used, and if you ever buy Lucky Mojo Safe Travel Oil, you'll see this little black twisty root in there. That's comfrey root. So I just would add that to your little list of things there to put into your stuff.
I think that's a fantastic suggestion. I mean, it really goes to the both readings talking about communities and helpers. So I think that's wonderful. Deacon Millett, do you have anything to add to this?
Well, I just started thinking about what oils I should pull out for preparing for my own trip, and Safe Travel is definitely one of my favorites. I feel like Fiery Wall of Protection makes a lot of sense, and Crown of Success. So I think I might hit up my luggage with that, and it will certainly help protect things along the way.
Yeah, you're protecting luggage is very good, and you can actually use the ash that I recommended, not just on the soles of your feet, but you can also put it, you can use it very lightly and very carefully on your luggage. You don't want to just, you know, if someone touches it and their hand comes away with ash, immediately suspicions are going to be raised, so that's not a good thing. You just want to use it discreetly and a little bit. The use of fern in particular is quite, you know, useful there. Protecting luggage is a really, really important part of travel. Arriving safely, but also arriving safely with your possessions, because nothing says stress like arriving and then not having a change of clothes for the next day, or your toiletries, or whatnot. Do you have any specific questions for us, or did you understand the kind of root work that we've given you?
All sounds excellent, and thank you all so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm going to add one other thing too. In the chat room, someone mentioned Crucible of Courage, but not everybody needs courage. It is a good one to add, but I know Charles to be a very courageous person on his own, from his own heart, so I wouldn't think that, he would need that.
No, not at all. I think.
But it is great for people who are, yeah.
It's a fantastic addition, but I think what we've got is really all Charles needs at this point. We hear already a charismatic and bold speaker as it is. So it's just a matter of making sure that everything goes smoothly and your talk is wonderfully successful. And also the key of knowing what role that you're going to play. Because I think that being that dynamic, having multiple roles, because you have quite literally multiple roles at this event. And so knowing what time, when, is really the key to your success, which is why the root work is aimed at addressing that. Thank you very much for your call, Charles. It was lovely reading for you, not something that we get to do every day. This has been definitely one of those shows. This has been a first show, that first time we get to interview Kat. We get to read and prescribe for Charles. Go ahead. It has been wonderful in that regard. Thank you for your call. We are going to have a brief break and then move on to a special announcement. So be sure to stay tuned.
We are still gearing up, getting all our ducks in a row, all our eggs in one basket for this year's 2016 Hoodoo Heritage Festival. That's going to be the 9th annual Hoodoo Heritage Festival. And it's going to be, of course, as it is every year, in beautiful Forestville, California, right there on the grounds of Lucky Mojo. And I want to tell you, folks, don't wait until the last minute. Don't wait and can still get in and get your tickets tonight. Tomorrow, Phil, and enjoy the festival with us. It is going to be an amazing time. We're going to see a lot of regulars there from the LMC Radio Network, including Candelo Cambisa of Candelo's Corner and Beverly Smith of In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Both of them are going to be sitting in on the panel discussion workshop for spells and spiritual work for social justice. You'll also be able to see Miss Catherine Ironwood from the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour here on the LMC Radio Network. She's going to be there with a workshop around her book, which is a re-release of a very old classic book. This is a book, perhaps the first book ever to be sold about the topic of hoodoo, that was not a scholarly book, not an anthropological book, that was expressly sold in candle shops, and that is Louis de Clermont's Legends of Incense, Herbs, and Roots. And let me just tell you, it's a fantastic book, and it has been difficult to find a decent copy of this book for, well, a generation almost. And Miss Cat and all the wonderful crew, including Gray Townsend, our wonderful artist and book cover producer, have gone in and they have cleaned this book up. They have made it just sterling, just absolutely snap. And she's going to be talking about that book and the history of it and similar books. And you're also going to be able to get, if you buy a ticket to the festival, you will receive that book free. We're also going to see there Andrea Weston. That's right, our own Andrea Weston from Liquid Libations here on the LMC Radio Network. She's going to be there. She's going to be teaching a workshop about domestic hoodoo, hoodoo in the home. And she's also going to be a part of the fantastic opening ceremony. And if you were there last year and you saw the fantastic opening ceremony that she helped put together, you know this one's going to be just as good, if not better. But wait, there's more. The Reverend John St. Germain from the Crystal Silence League Hour, here also on the LMC Radio Network, is going to be doing a workshop on his new book about crystals and gemstones and their use in magic, healing, meditation, you name it. This man's an expert on the topic, as you well know if you listen to the Crystal Silence League every week, and he's going to be there. You will also receive his book free, again, for the cost of your ticket. Wait, I'm not done yet. Don't for a second think it's only going to be the folks from the LMC Radio Network. David Shee, a fantastic individual, scholarly, intelligent, with a wonderful background in East Asian, North Asian, and Mongolian and Manchurian shamanism and magic. His family is actually from the area. He has written a wonderful book. He is going to be doing a workshop on his book, and you receive that book free as well. Oh, yes. We're also going to have noted, fairly well-known textile artist, former member of the board of the American Quilt Museum, Gabrielle Swain, who's going to be there, and she's going to be talking about textiles and sewing in hoodoo, and she's going to, I believe, be displaying one of her award-winning quilts out there that you're going to be able to see. She's going to be teaching her class, and so much more. Miss Robin, one of the best hoodoo practitioners that I know, Oakland, California, is with us every year. She's going to be there. She's going to be teaching a class on curios and lucky tokens. You don't want to miss that. Cast Excelsior, my good friend and an amazing worker as well, is going to be teaching a class on using, I don't know quite how to describe it. You really need to come and see this. It's going to be about using bones and other, quote, necromantic materials, the parts of animals, etc., in your work. Michelle Jackson, the author of Bone Shells and Curios, is going to be there with a follow-up to her previous workshop. She's going to be teaching that. And the place is going to be packed with some of the finest workers in many different spiritual paths that you can imagine. Also, they're going to drag my silly butt in there as well to MC the event, and I will be releasing my new book on the sporting life in hoodoo, which covers the world of the prostitute, the pimp, the gambler, folks in the LGBT community, people who run clubs, people who run brothels, people who run casinos, as well as those who deal in, well, how should we put this, selling illegal goods. And I'm going to be releasing that book. This book has over 100 different spells and recipes in it, and I'll be teaching a class on it, and you'll receive that book free as well. That and so much more, plus a presenter's dinner that you can buy tickets to go to the presenter's dinner in Hobnob, get up close and personal with all these folks we've been talking about, a fabulous reader's tent with more readers than you can shake a stick at, where you'll be able to get readings in, oh, just perhaps half a dozen or more different styles of divination. We're going to have two massage therapists there. You'll be able to get massages. There's also going to be a free continental breakfast every day and a free little lunch, Southern-style lunch each day. Madame Pamita is going to be there to provide entertainment during lunch. But wait, she's also teaching a class on Tees and Tisane, and you'll be able to see her and take her class as well. So much is going on. Do not wait. Go. Get your ticket now and come on out. I'll be so happy.
That was certainly an interesting announcement. It got me certainly pumped up. It's been a fantastic show. I'm very excited about the Heritage Festival. I'll hear Gerald talk about it. We had an opportunity to interview the lovely Miss Kat, and it was really a treat. You were a wonderful guest, Miss Kat. We're going to have
Thank
Papa Newt come in and lead us out.
Thank you, Conjure Man Ali and Deacon Millet, and thank you, Ms. Kat of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, for being our guest this week. We do invite you to join us next week, as we will be rebroadcasting next week. My apologies, as the 2016 Hoodoo Heritage Festival is underway, so please be sure to purchase your tickets now at HoodooHeritageFestival.com. And once again, we've come to an end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Conjurman Ali at ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California, and Deacon Millet of FourAltars.org in Joshua Tree, California. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from PapaNewt.com in Columbus, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive at luckymojo.com/radioshow.com. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here, and we do look forward to seeing you again when we return on Sunday, May 22nd. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thanks, Papa Newt. I want to give a special thanks to, of course, the wonderful Deacon Millet, who subbed in for me as co-host. You are a fantastic and gracious co-host. This was so much fun getting to interview the lovely Kat.
Yeah.
I hope, Kat, you had fun as well. I'm very excited.
Oh, it was great. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Oh, it was wonderful. I'm so excited for your book, and look forward to it. Everyone remember, the Hoodoo Heritage Festival is next week. If you are not bought your tickets, please do so. You do not want to miss out on the event of the year. And be sure to keep your eyes open for all the amazing books that are coming out, including Mrs. Cat's own book. So, good night, everyone, and have a fantastic weekend, and happy Mother's Day.
Yes.
Good night. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Yeah. Take care, all.
All right. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Righty, 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.